Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid. Oh, you guys, how are you? What's going on? Kevin Goatee here, gutting the sacred cow. And we have this week Brandon Wienerd from Bro Bible as he takes on probably one of the most successful reboots of all time, Ocean's 11. That's right, before we get to it, hey, you know the drill. GuttingTheSacredCow.com every single day has brand new blog articles as well as our merch shop, hats, bags. It's getting close to hoodie time. Long sleeve shirts are in the store as well. God, I hate saying that when I think about fall coming. God damn it, I hate that. GuttingTheSacredCow.com. And listen, follow us on Instagram, please. Gutting the Sacred Cow podcast. And on YouTube, subscribe there. Without further ado, here's Brandon Wienerd doing Ocean's 11.
Gather around, here's what I know. It's just that.
I'll be back. Ha! You didn't think I would say that, did you? You say that in all the movies you're in. Kevin Israel, name that film.
Last Action Hero.
Yes! Good man. I didn't know if you were going to get that. I was 50-50 on that, with that one on you. I thought you
may- That's another movie I haven't seen in a dog's age.
Can I just tell you, which I hate when people say that, so I'm just going to fucking say, I love that film. I loved it when I first saw it. It is so wrongly hated. I love Last Action
People
Hero.
People hate it?
That was one of the most hated Arnold films, and it bombed in the theater.
Really?
Maybe
I thought it was a very self-aware movie.
Thank you. And that's why I thought it was so fucking good. Boy, I love it. I get sucked right into it every time. Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, gutting the sacred cow. We're back. Hope you're loving more fun episodes like 40-Year-Old Virgin, like Whiplash, like... What else did we just do? Son of a bitch. I blanked already.
Casablanca.
There you go. Today we have joining us from Bro Bible. Well, you remember Connor from Bro Bible a few weeks ago did Taken. Now we've got Brandon Wienerd from Bro Bible taking on. Are you ready for this one, Kevin Israel? And I think this is the first reboot we've allowed, Ocean's 11. Brandon, how are you? Welcome to the podcast.
I am good. Thanks so much for having me on, man.
Pleasure is ours.
Welcome, Brandon.
Yeah. We're not, again, it's a tough reboots, not really allowed because most reboots suck, but.
Yeah. I was like, I'm a little surprised to learn of that rule, but I feel like this is a good exception to the rule because it was like a big reboot.
Oh, it's huge. And I would say the other reboot, two reboots come to mind. Kevin, you jump in as well. I would allow would be Dread because that was fan-fucking-tastic. And I would also allow the Star Trek reboot, the 2009 version. But other reboots, 95% of the time, are trash and would not qualify for this very fine podcast in which you're listening to now. But Brandon has chosen Ocean's 11, 2001. Can you believe this is 20 years old already, guys? I saw this in the fucking theater. 20 years old, 2001, budget at the time, $85 million. A haul of $450 million dollars. Turn that into 2021 money. $130.4 million budget. $690.3 million haul. That's poor man's Marvel money there, Kevin Israel.
Yeah. They were like the lesser Avengers.
That'll be the Eternals.
That's a lot of money for a movie that there's, you know, zero action sequences in at all and very little FX.
Fair.
A lot of handsome, though. There's a lot of handsome.
Especially Julia Roberts. Hey-oh!
As, not yet.
It's going to be throughout. As we know, IMDb is a scale 1 through 10 with decimal points. Brandon, we're going to go to you. What do you think Ocean's 11 scored on IMDb?
I'm going to be generous. I'm going to say it's like 8.
Kevin, like Israel. Well, give me a flat number.
8.3.
Kevin Israel.
I'm going to go flat 8.
7.7. Wow. Close. Rotten Tomatoes is a 1 through 100 percentage base score. Kevin Israel, critics, Rotten Tomatoes. Hit me with your best shot.
71.
Brandon.
Ooh, I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go 76.
Not high enough. 83.
Really?
Wow. What? So it was like pretty much beloved.
I would say.
Yeah.
Audience Rotten Tomatoes score, Brandon. Now it's your turn.
All right, I'm going to go even higher than 83 on audience. So you go like 86.
Kevin Israel.
I'm going to go higher than Brandon. I'm going to go 90.
You should have went lower. 80.
God damn it.
That surprised me.
That's surprising that the critics have this higher than the audience.
I would have thought this is a for sure 88 or above score from 100%, the audience.
100%.
Quotes. She already left me once. I don't think she'll do it again. That's the only quote I have from this film. This film is not quotable.
Kevin, I have.
Oh, sorry. Brandon, why don't you go since you jumped in? Go ahead.
No, I mean, there's a quote. There's like a sequence that I absolutely hate, which is, are you scared? Are you suicidal? Only in the morning. It's like meaningless, but
That is such a movie quote trope. It's nauseating. You're 100% right. Kevin Israel, how about yourself?
There are actually two great quotes that I have quoted from this movie. I saw you even before you got up this morning.
That's good.
Which I think is just a fantastic, fantastic quote. And you're a liar and a thief. I only lied about being a thief.
Cute. Very Marx Brothers-ish. Five fun facts. Who was originally supposed to star as Danny Ocean but bowed out? Huge name, A-lister.
I know this.
All right, then Kevin Israel, you try and take a stab.
It's like De Niro.
No, Scatman Crothers. I'm just kidding. Bruce Willis.
Oh, I can see that.
Who was in the second one, by the way.
As Bruce Willis.
And the second one was a steaming pile of shit. The second fun fact, who was supposed to play? Well, nah, I'm going to let you guess. Mark Wahlberg was supposed to play the role of Linus, but what did he bow out to make instead of Ocean's 11?
Ooh. Wow, 2001?
Yep. Band of Brothers?
No.
No, not Band of Brothers. Brother. It was something Brothers? Three Brothers? Four Brothers?
Ooh. Yeah. I know what you're talking about, but no, that's not it. Brandon, want to venture a guess?
I mean, that was right around when, I mean, I imagine Entourage was starting to get made, but I
but he wasn't in it.
I don't even know.
Okay. I'm going to say the name, and you're both going to just fucking slap your forehead and go, Jesus Christ, I forgot. Planet of the Apes.
No, I'm glad I forgot that movie.
Me too. That movie was terrible.
That movie was awful. Terrible. I saw that in theaters.
So did I.
Abe Lincoln. What's better than Abe Lincoln?
Yeah. Number three. Luke and Owen Wilson was supposed to be the brothers in the film, but the roles went to Scott Conn and Casey Affleck instead. The Wilsons went off to do The Royal Tenenbaums.
Big mistake. Huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You guys hate The Royal Tenenbaums, right? That's like
I hate Wes Anderson. That's my thing. That's,
yeah. Hating Wes Anderson. That's great.
You like Wes Anderson, but I could see.
Huge fan.
Yeah. Okay. We'll agree to disagree to have good taste. Julia Roberts said she fell asleep not once, but twice while trying to watch the original Ocean's 11. Finally, something that I have in common with Julia. Oh, actually, two things. I'm not a fan of the musical stylings of Lyle Lovett as well. Mm-hmm. That joke fell flat. Number five.
I like If I Had a Boat. It's a good song.
Number five, George Clooney, a notorious prankster, pranked Brad Pitt by putting a bumper sticker in the shape of a pot plant on the back of his car that said, fuck cops.
Oh, that rapscallion.
Wow.
I love the word rapscallion, too.
I know.
But like, I feel like a story like that, though, is so, it's so like, there's no receipts for it. Like, it's in this different era where it's like, oh, okay, cool, guys. We gotta believe you that this was funny.
You know what? I do believe him, and I'll tell you why. Because he was on Stern not long ago, and he tells a great story about how he was with he used to live with Richard Kind, who was one of the guys that Clooney famously gave $1 million to when he had all of his friends over his house. And he gave like 10 guys $1 million a pop. He was staying at Richard Kind's house, and Richard Kind had a cat. And one day, George Clooney took a shit in the litter box. So when Richard Kind to go change the litter, he found this humongous turd in there. So I believe that story. And he talked about it on the Stern of all the different pranks that he played. So he's whatever. Who gives a shit? I'll buy it.
I'd like to shit in all my friends' litter boxes who have cats.
Yeah, fuck cats. We're dog people, you goddamn communist.
Damn right.
Terry McNeely, I love that guy. One of the best jokes ever. He goes, cats are the Hillary Clinton of pets. Great joke. It's even better live. Ask a Gutter, Kevin Israel, from yet again another favorite of ours, Brandon Oglesby, Brandon who does the Brandon recap. Question for you, Brandon. Well, Brandon for Brandon. How cute is that?
I love it.
Is your biggest issue, I guess you'll answer this in your argument, but is your biggest issue that it's a remake or Don Cheadle's accent?
No. Cheadle's accent.
Don Cheadle's accent is atrocious.
Which, by the way, he
must be with a bunch of proper villains, finally.
He Princess Leia's the shit by forgetting the accent in 2 and 3. Did you remember that?
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely pointless for him to have an accent in the first place.
Speaking of, our old buddy Bango 2331 on Twitter, why have we not canceled Don Cheadle for culturally appropriating the British?
Dude, have you guys watched House of Lies with Don Cheadle on Showtime at all?
Is it good? No.
It is not good. It's terrible, and it's one of those like, hey, we have a bunch of money to make a scripted like comedy show. But it's like in the tales of the Entourage era where people thought they could do like whatever and it could come across as tasteful just because it was like nice. It's outrageous to watch it in like today's cultural climate. Outrageous. I highly recommend watching it for that exercise alone.
And I love Entourage still, except the movie. The movie
you see so much naked Don Cheadle. It's like banana. Yeah.
At Kirstie LS22, another one of our favorites. If there was an opportunity to remake Ocean's 11, and the only change were the actors, who is being cast?
And I'd say,
without going super crazy, give me like 4 or 5 that you would redo.
All right. I would hear me out on this. I would dip into like other, because my whole premise of hating this is based on like the idea of like hangout comedies or hangout movies in general. So I would dabble in other hangout movie universes to remake it. All right. So there would be like the Seth Rogen, like
I knew you were going to go there.
Fuck. Yeah. It'd be like the Seth Rogen universe or like an Adam Sandler like ish like universe. And to me, I feel like it would not be trying as hard in either of those universes to be so like obnoxiously pretentiously cool.
I have two for you. I just thought of right now. And the first one, so it's lazy. It's so easy. And that would be Bradley Cooper as Danny Ocean. That's an easy one.
It's the same guy.
It's basically the same guy.
I know. Right. Yeah. And also we had this discussion before, Kevin, in Israel. So I know you're going to laugh. Playing the role of Julia Roberts as Emma Stone.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, same. That sounds like a literally though, like the exact same movie.
Yeah.
Like
cute, but not hot. And that's my that's my argument for those two. It's
redhead. It's like redhead, like vaguely like.
I would go a completely different direction. I would go like an action movie route and do it almost like the
John Cena as Linus. Got it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he basically is, but you know, Stallone or Schwarzenegger is one of the guys, like make it and I turn it into an action movie as opposed to a, you know, the subtly cool heist movie.
You know what? I agree. Let's make it different. Let's have the Elliot Gould role played by Cedric the Entertainer. But there goes all the Jewish references, which were such a lore of this film. Kevin Israel, I think it's time to let Brandon do what everyone else is trying to do on this fun podcast, and that is
gut
the sacred cow.
Oh, you don't cheer?
You can.
And we're definitely not opposed to cheering.
All right. So is this where I get to go off?
All as long as you want.
Have at it.
Okay, so the reason why I chose this, I chose Ocean's 11, is because I deeply enjoyed Army of the Dead, with Zack Snyder, Netflix, etc. And like a total dork, watched his like making of or whatever about it, etc. And like, the whole time I was like, oh, this is like a cool take on like a Vegas heist movie. And then he's like, oh, it's like Ocean's 11. I was like, oh yeah, this is just Ocean's 11 with like zombies and, you know, actually good writing instead of like, and like things actually happen, not just like, oh, the plan comes together. I cannot stand how like, I think people gravitated towards Ocean's 11 so much because, yeah, it's a remake. I don't think a lot of people that went to go see it in theaters were really familiar with the Rat Pack movie. I think it was such a culturally like vain time, that kind of pre 9/11 like era, you know, cultural era. It was so culturally bankrupt coming out of the, you know, 90s that you could make a movie where it's just playing up like, ooh, cool. Maybe this is all going to come together. Hey, look, here's, you know, Brad Pitt. Here's Matt Damon, like whatever. And like, that's all that carries the entire fucking movie. Nothing happens in this movie. That's my basic gist of it. There's nothing that is by 2021 standards. There's nothing that happens that is exciting really at all. There's a guy with an axe to grind. He goes, he puts the band back together and you know, they make it happen. And the ways that they make it happen are so annoying. You know, this motley crew of criminals that are celebrated and cheeky, And, you know, don't, like, they're too relatable to be hardened criminals knocking off a fucking casino, seemingly consequence free.
True.
And look, that to me, that's very frustrating, like, frustrating part of it. The cheekiness of, like, all right, hey, we have to lean on star power at every turn. I remember seeing it in theaters, and that was like the big thing, was like, whoa, this guy's in it and this guy's in it. And oh, we have this guy, like, oh, look, it's Julia Roberts. Like, that trope just doesn't work as a storytelling device now, but that set the stage for it. You know, set the stage for a ton of big budget Hollywood movies that only leaned on that as any like element of storytelling. So, oddly, like, even though it's cinematographically like very cool, like, the story is meh. There's so many better heist movies in the heist movie canon, yet this one remains celebrated and, you know, lauded as one of the best, I think, just because of the ensemble cast that it has. Both Clooney and Brad Pitt at the top of their game in this point in time, their star power only like goes up from there. Clooney being a guy that gets out of jail, there's no real allusion to like why he was there in the first place. Whatever he was in for, 4 years probably wasn't enough, as he is like lauded for. And the idea of this being a revenge play, you know, look, Las Vegas tourism brochure for the most part. Like, and I feel like that is very, there's some things that happen in it that are incredibly frustrating. Like you guys will remember the name better than me, but the old guy who his briefcase has to go in the vault.
Carl Reiner.
That would never happen.
Right.
That whole situation, not to be like a continuity error guy, but that's such a frustrating, you know, frustrating way of trying to, of like, you know, creating a divergence. All of the divergences created in the setup, in like basically the second act of the movie, are so incredibly, they're very like frustrating to poke holes in as like things seeming realistic in its own like orbit. So hence my hatred number one. Hatred number two, the EMP. All right.
Oh, damn it.
Come on, that was not a hard one. You knew he was going to say that, Kevin.
EMP is terrible. You literally you have a weapon stolen from the armed forces to like, you know, commit a crime. Like, I mean, you know, I know this was like made in a pre 9/11 like, you know, world, but literally, like, you know, we're talking like some serious consequences here, like on that. The EMT is so frustrating that it goes off in this like one moment. That would be the biggest like thing to happen for weeks on end if that were actually to be a like criminally masterminded thing. I hate the EMP. I hate it so much. Julia Roberts. So like, all right, not to be like a judgment of what Tessa's character is, but like, hate, loves terrible men. Like, like, there's no, you know, all of this is kind of seen as like this like cat and mouse thing. This kind of like weighing of egos between, you know, between her, what's her husband's name?
Danny Ocean?
Not Danny Ocean.
Terry Benedict.
Terry Benedict. Terry,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Terry Benedict, like, it's like, okay, they're, you know, she's she just clearly is attracted to, you know, narcissistic sociopaths, and, you know, is attracted to a level of toxicity that I think is very questionable. And that, you know, I don't think that the world, the universe of the Ocean's movies has ever tried to answer, you know, that. As a hangout movie, meh. Leaned way too heavily on the idea of celeb, but it, oddly, it worked. That resonated at the time, but it doesn't hold up for the most part. Two, so many like frustrating things where you're like, how? There's no way that could have ever gotten played off. I think there are a lot of heist movies where that do that incredibly well. The one that I can think of that to me did like stands up better is like Inside Man and the taking of like Pelham 1-2-3.
Good movies. Yep.
Yeah. And even Thomas Crown Affair, I think, does like a really good job of it too. It's just that like, to me, the way this movie was made was just to be a Las Vegas like tourism brochure, which it worked at the time. Now in watching it, like the couple of times that I've watched it since then, it's like, okay, this is cool, but like sort of flat.
Got it. All right.
Fair.
And even in the one-liners, there's no good writing. We even just like talked through that. Like there are terrible. There's nothing really charismatic about like how there's no comedy punch to it. And it's like dialogue doesn't even really need to exist in the movie in order to push forward. But we get none of that. So we get an EMP and we get Don Cheadle talking in a British accent for some awful reason. When Scott Conn and when they're arguing on the casino floor, like that scene where they like kind of
Balloon Boy, all that shit.
Yeah, Balloon Boy and everything like that. That's like, I feel like Scott Conn could be typecast in that role for the next like 13 projects that he was on after that.
Isn't that the best goddamn life to live, to be typecast in 13 fucking projects?
It'd be amazing. That's the dream. Oh, yeah.
And my dad was Sonny Corleone. Life sucks.
Tweeter, you're going to go to jail.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a job where I played a detective and had to live on the state of Hawaii for 7 fucking seasons. Wah.
I think that if there were to be an Ocean's 11 remake could never like the premise of that question is so flawed because it could never happen. It could never happen in a truly like endearing way again. I feel like
you're trying to tell me Ocean's 8 didn't cover that ground with ease.
I didn't see Ocean's 8.
Lucky
I
wasn't you.
I did. And I don't remember it.
I did. It was terrible. It had nothing to, you know, the only tie-in that it had with the Ocean's franchise, fucking Sandra Bullock. She said, oh yeah, Danny Ocean's is my brother. And she sits in a fucking mausoleum with this casket in front of him. That's it. No other fucking, I think there was a couple of walk-ons. I really forgot. So, you know, listeners, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember shit except for I'm Danny Ocean's sister. Like that was it should have been a standalone film. Like 8 chicks rob the fucking Met Gala. Okay, fine. You don't need to have the Ocean's tag franchise part of this. It's completely nonsensical to even try to do it. They just were trying to capitalize of a recognizable franchise and go, oh, it's an Ocean's film. We're going to go see this, but oh, make it all women. It was fucking laughable.
Like I have a laundry list of movies that I feel like do it better. All right. But Lucky Logan, a way better heist movie.
I hated that. I fucking hated Lucky Logan.
Oh man. The premise of knocking off a NASCAR race is absurd. That's why I love it. Like way better than the premise of knocking off a casino. And I understand why you hate it. Did you hate it because of Daniel Craig's accent?
that was not a favorite feature of mine, but I just felt the whole thing. And then the payoff was fucking shit too. I hated the payoff.
Payoff was so bad.
Yeah.
Let's see. Inception, Drive, kind of a great heist movie. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm. Not a fan.
I only saw it once.
I've seen all of these movies, and I don't remember any of them.
Yeah.
The heist movie thing is always the same. That's like, that's the whole thing. What the movie that I feel like this, that Ocean's 11, like, I don't want to say stole a lot of, but like took a lot from like cinematographically and everything like that. 3,000 Miles to Graceland.
Terrible movie.
But I feel like it like tried to align itself with that for how it was going to push like the Vegas movie forward.
Sure.
My position is closed. Ocean's 11. Overrated. Nice.
Give me a number 1 to 10. What did you think?
When I saw it, okay, can I give you two numbers?
One, nope, you can give me one number like I asked for.
4.
4. All right.
I like that there's no description, no explanation, just a solid 4.
But here's the thing. 4, watching it now. If you've never seen Ocean's 11 and you're just watching it right now, it's a 4. In the time, yeah, it was like a 7 or 8. Because we were dumb back then.
Dumb. Kevin Israel, why don't you kick this motherfucker off?
Okay, I want to start off with an important message about how I feel about this movie. I love Don Cheadle in this movie because I hate when British people get cast to play Americans. It drives me so crazy and makes me so angry that I think I'm actually starting to hate British people because of it. There's millions of great American actors out there that are either working or desperate to work. And every time one of these goddamn Brits gets cast to play an American, it drives me fucking bananas. And I loved Henry Cavill as Superman. And I still know that there was some American guy out there who could have played Superman. So watching Don Cheadle, the most non-British guy in the world, just crap up a British accent for no apparent reason. Like, the character didn't even need to be British. There was no reason. He could have just been Don Cheadle. But they made him British, and he did it so badly. And I hope British people watched it, and they died a little inside. Because that it gives me a little feeling of vindication for every time I watch fucking Charlie Hunnam try to pretend he's American by saying, "What do you mean, mother? You're not from California, you blonde prick." Anyway.
That's a fantastic fucking point. I love how you're 100% right. This is us spitting water in their fucking collective face. Like, you know what? Yeah. This time, go fuck yourselves.
Yep.
Signed, USA.
We kicked you out of our country, and twice. Here's Don Cheadle. Go fuck yourself. So there's that makes me love this movie. But now I'm going to go to my other point of why this movie drove me crazy. And it's Brandon already covered it, but I need to touch on it again. The EMP.
The EMP is ridiculous.
The M in EMP should have stood for MacGuffin. Because it didn't need to exist in the movie. They should have gone with the whole part where he was going to rework the city's power grid. But then he found out they fixed something and we're Bonnie or whatever he said. Rubble.
Well, trouble.
Bonnie, rubble. Trouble. Trouble. Yeah, and they're all like, oh, yeah, right. They didn't need that whole EMP thing. It was so ridiculous. It's ridiculous on so many levels. First of all, there happened to be this ridiculously powerful device right conveniently located in California. They knew where it was, and they were just able to like pick a lock into a building and get it. That's insanity. Yeah. They might as well have gotten a nuclear bomb if it's like that easy. And then they get it and they use it, and there weren't even like nobody was tracking them down. They weren't wearing masks. They didn't do it. Like, Danny Ocean was still dressed nicely to go on this mission where they should have been, you know, all in black. And you should have. It was so stupid, and they didn't need it in the movie. Like, they didn't need that, other than it served to hurt the Asian guy's hand, which was supposed to be a thing, but then it never served a purpose either, other than his hand got stuck for that minute because he had the cast on. It was like all these little things happen just so other certain things could happen, But they didn't, none of it necessarily needed to happen. Like, it could have been his sleeve that got caught in there. He didn't, the whole EMP scene just drove me crazy in this movie. And it always, every time I've watched this movie, it takes me out of it because everything's going along and you have to suspend a lot of disbelief in this movie because a million things in this movie had to happen perfectly in the heist for it to take off, for it to work perfectly. And there were things that they had no control over. Like when they got into the argument, when they had the balloon boy argument, they knew that the security guard was going to leave and then he was going to have the chance to go. What happens if a different security guard came over? Like it wasn't even like, well, that's just how a heist would work. Well, no, it's not, because they would have a more broad set of plans to allow for different possibilities. But their plan was so specific that if one of these tiny things didn't work out, it all would have gone to shit and they would have, you know, either been arrested or not gotten the money, or God forbid, George Clooney to get Julia Roberts back. But so that the whole narrative behind the heist drove me crazy. And I get that you don't necessarily want to nitpick one of these heist movies because you're just supposed to kind of go with it. But it was too thin. All of the little things that had to happen perfectly were too thin. I will go to Scott Kahn and Casey Affleck. I really liked their characters, and I'll get my plug in that Scott Kahn should be Wolverine, just because I like getting that in there when I can. And I still think he could be Wolverine because he's the right height and he has the right build and he can act. But I like their characters. Their characters really, again, it was weird because when they were going through all their little assignments for what these people are, they go, oh, well, we need some drivers. They drove once. They drove the van to get the EMP. They never drove anything else after that. Casey Affleck controls the radio-controlled car. But you think that there's going to be like this big driving scene where they're going to be like chasing around town in Las Vegas. And you never get that. You never get that from them. All they should have been the actors or whatever they called them, because they played 90 different characters. They were in that casino at least 8 times as different characters, and you're telling me nobody watching the security tapes ever were like, those are the same guys. That the balloon guy is the same guy as his security guards, or is the same guy as, but it was just so weird that they cast them as the drivers when they were actually just playing, they were supposed to kind of be multifaceted actors, I guess. And it's almost the same thing with Matt Damon's character Linus. Because you see him like picking pockets and doing all that, but he never does any of that in the movie. He's just this kid that they're kind of dragging along with them. But his actual skills in being a thief serve no purpose in this movie. He doesn't actually do anything to use those skills. The character that I love the most in this movie is Bernie Mac. I love Bernie Mac in this movie.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic in this movie. I love almost every scene he's in. The scene buying the vans is magnificent, where he's talking about the lotion and he's slowly squeezing his hand. I will say this, and I don't know, and I never thought about it before, but watching the scene now, I'm like, why would the guy have sold in the car? Like, you're crushing my hand, so I'm going to give you the vans for cheaper? That doesn't make any sense. I'm going to call the police. I'm not going to give you a deal. But it's still a great scene. And seeing and then a scene later with Matt Damon where they get into the whole argument in the questioning room in the casino. He's just great in this, and he's just Bernie Mac. He's just Bernie Mac in this movie, and it's just really fun to see because he almost felt like he didn't belong in this movie, like the character he was being or himself. But I love every scene that he was in. I thought was fantastic. George Clooney and Brad Pitt. And I love Brad Pitt. I adore Brad Pitt and so many things that he does. And I think that he's so much more than just a pretty face. And I mean, he is a magnificently pretty face, but in this movie, he's literally just a pretty face. He has no real personality. They were like, you know what? You're kind of boring. Why don't you eat all the time? Just always be eating. And he does succeed in making shrimp cocktail eating look kind of cool.
Wait, time out. 1 second. As one of the fun facts, that was Brad Pitt's decision to be eating the entire time.
Oh, was it? Yeah. You know
what?
To show
how unflappable that Rusty is.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That makes sense. But other than that, his character is kind of blah. And so is Danny Ocean is also kind of blah. Like there's nothing specifically that almost differentiates them. They're just both two good looking guys who kind of everything just sort of works out for them. And that's it. The person that must create the biggest fury among any group is Julia Roberts must drive feminists crazy in this movie, because her character is nothing more than a pawn to be used by these two guys, as Brandon says, two sociopaths, which is a great analysis of both of them. She's just this thing that they both want, and she's just like, okay. And then when she goes back to Danny, at the end, when she goes back to him, why did she fall back in love with him? What happened at that moment? I can see why she hates Benedict, because she saw what he really is. George Clooney, he was still a thief and a liar. And he was a thief and a liar again after he said he wasn't going to do that again. So she should hate. She should have. I would have liked the movie better if she like left him. And then when he went to get, you know, if she left Benedict, and then when Clooney went to get her or whatever, she was just like, you haven't changed. I don't want to be with, like, that would have been a little more authentic, and it would have given her character a little more substance. But she's just like, oh, I'm in love. Like, and then she shows up at prison to pick him up after she never went to visit him in the first place, when he's still the same person. He didn't evolve. He didn't change from whoever he was when he was. Other than he's George Clooney. He's a fucking good looking guy with magnificent hair. Like, that's it. That's all he has going for him. What's that?
That is a sweet ass head of
hair. Oh man, he even with the beard, even in the beginning when he was supposed to look like shit, it's still like he's still gorgeous. Like, stop it. You can't make him look like shit. I did also like, just because we just did Casablanca, I did like there's a little nod where he goes, of all the gin joints.
Oh.
Yes, I love getting it.
there are this like Ocean. The movie does reference a lot of different movies. There are like a lot of like weird little nods. One that is like, so apparently the guy that's selling the van is in the Bernie Mac van scene. That's the same guy that kicks like the cheat's ass in Casino.
Charlie M, you held out three fucking days for Charlie fucking M.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I will further, one of the greatest lies that Hollywood ever pulled on the public at large.
I know you're going to say already. On us, I know you're going to say.
Is that Julia Roberts is gorgeous.
Yep.
Listen, she's a pretty lady. She's not this gorgeous, stunning, stop my breath. Linus is going to be like, this is my favorite part of the day when she walks. Even when she came walking down, she was wearing this kind of like, you know, conservative pantsuit or skirt suit. And she looks okay. Like, she looks okay. She's not this stunning, even in Pretty Woman, she wasn't this like gorgeous. And I feel like we just keep getting lied to by Hollywood. And nobody has the balls to stand up and be like, no. There's more beautiful.
I have your answer. She's attractive enough where some people think she's a smoke show, but she's not. But she's not also obscenely attractive where women will be in the theater going, "I'll fuck her." Like,
no, you're right. You're
Salma
right.
Hayek, Denise Richards.
She's not Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
And I'll tell you what, I watched it with my wife last night, and she came down when that scene happened, when Lionel was like, oh, this is my favorite part of the day. And I was like, come on, she's not that person. Like, she's not. She's a good actress. She's good enough looking. And my wife was like, she's beautiful. And I was like, it's almost like Soylent Green. Like, nobody knows what they're eating. They're just being fed this shit from Hollywood. And we're just like, yep, she's beautiful. And it drives me bananas because of Pretty Woman. After that movie, we were constantly like, and I think it's just because the name was Pretty Woman. We were all like, she's the iconic woman that we're all trying to achieve. And it angers me so much. And it wouldn't even bother me if that scene didn't happen where he was like, oh my God, she's so, cause it's just like, all right. And it's almost like Julia Roberts Ryder when she stars in a movie somewhere, her agent's like, you have to refer to how beautiful she is. And somebody has to trip over themselves and get hit by a car when they're staring at her. Cause That's just what Mr. Roberts.
The question would be from now on, have you ever jerked off to Julia Roberts? And if you say yes, you're a liar.
Doesn't she play a prominent part in the sequel? I feel like I've seen the
she's secondary. That's not Julia. She's pregnant too, and they're trying to get her past to get her inside and all that. It's almost, you know, kind of Marx Brothers ish again. There you go.
Does her involvement in the Ocean's universe like end after?
Yes.
After
that? She's not in 13.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even remember.
So it was just like, okay, cool. Like, get the bag to do this terrible movie and then move on.
And there were a couple more points in the movie that made no sense. When they put Danny in the room and he's got to get beaten up by the guy who he already knows, and he planned ahead of time that he was the guy that was going to come beat him up because he knew Terry Benedict would call that exact guy. When he had two huge no-neck henchmen standing outside, either of whom could have done a fine job beating the shit out of Danny Ocean, but they had to call this biker guy in. Why did he call that guy? Why was that guy? Why couldn't you have had Vinny or Dino beat up fucking Danny? That was also just a point where that was also one of those points where it was like, so he knew that he was going to call this guy and that guy was going to give him time. And by the way, that guy was in there just pretending to beat somebody up for probably 20 minutes. And wasn't worried that one of those guys was going to check in and be like, hey, don't kill him or something like that.
I like how you say Vinny or Dino. Why could it be Mitch or Saul? Huh?
Because I don't like Italians.
clearly.
The British and the Italians. Screw them all.
Well, to that point, though.
And there was another point where Don Cheadle was talking. And I have to...
Oh, sorry. I don't mean to interject, but I want to back off that real quick. Danny Ocean's whole thing, though, is that he's kind of like the guy that, like, in like sort of a greasy way, knows everyone. For example, the security guy when they steal like the blueprints for the casino, like it's like a dude that he just like randomly, you know, the elements of his criminal underground.
I'm going to disagree. If you thought it was unbelievable now for them to pull off that fucking heist, they had to have 15 other 20 other people in, you know, low people in high situations, a la security guards, the stripper and all that shit. They have to have these touch points and pay them off somehow. Otherwise, it's going to be an even bigger that doesn't happen. So I buy that he's paying off the night watchman, the stripper, whomever. In 13, they get more into it as well. Some of the bribery of some of the other characters. I buy that.
I agree with both of you. I agree.
That's a lot of people that don't have plausible deniability for such an intense crime.
I covered the pinch. And by the way, it was $14.8 million that they each got, not 13. I don't know why the math was so hard for them to work out, but it was 163 some odd million dollars and they each got 14. And then at the end, they were like, we each get $13 million. Well, I would want my extra $1.8 million. Thank you very much.
Hold on. Back up to my point. That probably had to be taken into account for all the payoffs to all those lower level people, the security guards, the strippers. You got to bribe those motherfuckers. It's going to come out of everybody's share.
And you know what? That's fair. And I would have respected it if they actually said at some point, well, why don't we get 14? Well, we got to pay off all these. And to go back to your point, Kev, that yes, you're right. They would have obviously needed to pay off all these people. But in that scene in the beginning where they're getting the plans and then the one guy's like, oh, what's going on? The security guard.
Yeah.
If there was just a throwaway line, they're like, good thing we paid him, or good thing we're putting his kid through college, something like that.
Right.
It would have been, but it felt like each person was just, you know, Danny, he knows all these people and just accept it because he's good looking again.
Ocean's 12. See, this is the fatal flaw. Ocean's 12 should have been a movie about the accounting from Ocean's 11.
that would have been a rousing movie, but probably not as bad as the what we ended up getting. So look, in the end, this is one of those movies, and I'm going to blame it on this podcast. I went into this thinking that I loved this movie, or at least liked it a lot. I remember watching it and enjoying it a lot, and there were things that I really did like about it. It really also captured one of these like moments in time for my life, especially in the early, and I just graduated college. I had a little bit of money. I was trying to dress like these guys. It was that full trying to be George Clooney or Brad Pitt. So I got a lot of it, but on rewatch, it doesn't hold up as well as I thought it was going to. And the heist, and I remember thinking, oh my God, that they make the fake vault room and the videotape and this and that, which, by the way, that is Speed. What they did was Speed. That was the trick in Speed. We saw that already, where they overlay the video so you think that nothing's changed. So it didn't hold up as well as I thought it was going to. There were still some great scenes, some great lines, some great performances, but it definitely lost a couple of steps for me. So for me, Ocean's 11 is a 5.5.
5.5. All right. These notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com, where every day you find fantastic blog articles that Kevin, Israel, and I pump out every fucking day for your enjoyment for free. Perfect toilet reading. Lists of 10, our favorite subject. Now, of course, that doesn't happen, which a lot of that doesn't happen in this film. That's for goddamn sure. Movie news, movies that we've seen, movie quotes that we love, all that on guttingthesacredcow.com. Don't forget, if you want to advertise with us, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com. Stop on by. Hey, if you want to get some Gutting the Sacred Cow stickers, 1 for 3, 3 for 5, DM us and we'll get your information, send it out. GTSC Podcast on Twitter. Notes. This film is Trump Plaza Casino old. It's a Jersey reference, if all of you folks are there. That's how old this film is. I know this film is PG-13, but motherfucker, not enough Bernie Mac for my taste. And when you do have him, he's too leashed. That man is a thoroughbred, and he should be let loose to run as fast and as far as he want to.
Amen.
I know there are 10 other people in this film, but Bernie Mac is the true tour de force and talent in this film. I feel Scott Kahn and Seth Green are of the same height and have the same level of douchiness. I have zero proof to back this up, but my gut says so, and my gut is rarely wrong. Both are 5'4". Both act like they're 6'5". How about that?
Short kings.
In fairness, Scott Kahn does look like he could fuck somebody up, though.
Yeah, and Seth Green does not. I'll take
Seth Green does not, yeah.
There have been maybe 5 business proposals above board that were heard at a dog track. Maybe 5. Thank you. Kevin Israel, Elliot Gould is more Jewy than Charles Foster Kane's right-hand man. When Matt Damon lifts that guy's wallet from his inside suit jacket pocket on the subway in Chicago, that is one big huge, that doesn't happen. Who the fuck puts their wallet on their inside pocket of their suit jacket? No one. Stop it.
I just realized that this is around the time that Matt Damon was like Jason Bourne too.
Right before, because in Ocean's 13, they had to shoot around him doing Bourne Ultimatum.
Wow. Like, yep. I mean, huh.
But it's but it's post Rounders and post Talented Mr. Ripley.
He looks like Talented Mr. Ripley, Matt Damon in this.
Yeah. Two things that always, always put a smile on my face. Sweeping sky cam shots of Vegas and Elvis Presley's Little Less Conversation. I'm in Vegas in a month from now, and boy, my dick's already too messed. I can't believe you two left this one on the table for me to pick up. At what point can we believe that Brad Pitt speaks Chinese and understands what the acrobat is saying? For me, not ever. Oh, which one? Yeah. Brad Pitt plays cards with celebrities and does this, Rob's, you know, whatever, speaks fucking fluid Cantonese or whatever. Yeah. Bullshit.
You know what? It almost came off to me. I would let that one slide because it almost came off to me like almost a Han Solo nod where, you know, he just knew.
Oh, he speaks Wookiee. Okay, Kevin Israel. That's horseshit.
And yeah, I just compared an Asian guy to a Wookiee. Sorry. That's not what I meant.
At least Han Solo spent years with Chewbacca. How much time has Brad Pitt spent speaking with Chinese people? Debunked. Next quote that sent me off a fucking pier. Say hi to your mom. Say hi to yourself. She'll be on stage in 5 minutes. When has there ever been a mother-daughter duo striptease on a strip club? Answer, never. And if so, I don't want to see that shit because you know it's going to be fucking heinous. The amount of A-level pussy that George Clooney and Brad Pitt had must have filled Giant Stadium, Citi Field, and Yankee Stadium all in one. They could charge $25 just to smell their hands, right? Okay. Scott Conn and Casey Affleck as Saul's bodyguards are intimidating as Napoleon Dynamite and Alf as bodyguards. It's been a while since we had an Alf shout out, and I figure I'm the man to do so.
Big fan of Alf.
Who's not, besides communist assholes? Anyone else? You touched it, so I'm just going to say this once. Anyone else having a real hard fucking time believing that George fucking Clooney and Andy Garcia are fighting over horse-faced Julia Roberts? Everyone else is. How timely is it that Garcia and Clooney did a Casablanca quote? Because that's the episode you're hearing right now on this podcast this week as we tape it on Gutting the Sacred Cow. The British and their silly non sequitur rhymes. No wonder they're still dumb enough to pay taxes to the royal family who haven't ruled since. I didn't Google. Who gives a shit? America! No one watching the elevator security cameras, seeing Scott Conn and Casey Affleck dumping linens off the floor and doing a costume change in the elevator, and no one calls attention to that? Okay. No one questioning Brad Pitt's shitty toupee and Bones McCoy from Star Trek impression while doing CPR? Damn it. Damn it. Breathe, man. I'm a doctor. Not with that hairpiece or not. And it's some of the laziest dialogue I've seen in a little bit. While Brad Pitt is on the phone with Terry Benedict, I have two words for you. Minibar. Just what the fuck does that mean? Like, does Andy Garcia reply with, yep, we see you. You've eaten 3 Milky Ways from the minibar, 4 Stella Artois, and 3 condoms. Oh, yeah. You also watch Anal Burglars 12 4 consecutive times. Two words, minibar. What the fuck? Are you going to play random word association games now with this film? Oh, yeah? Two words for you, inkjet. Why are Matt Damon and George Clooney dressed like they're in a sci-fi gay porno while breaking into the vault?
That's a great point. I wondered what those weird shiny shirts they were wearing were.
Yeah, I mean... Why does Brad Pitt take off his helmet in the casino? Why not wait until you're off the fucking property where there are a million cameras are and a million passerbys on the street are and go, huh, that guy, I don't know. I think I've seen him in the casino 4 times already. In summary, this is mindless fun. I like it. But I prefer Ocean's 13 over all of them. How about that? Because Al Pacino's a casino boss. I don't know what it is. I loved it. I'm half in on the remote test for you. Brandon, by the way, the remote test, if you're at whatever point you happen to stumble upon this film on cable, you drop the remote and go, yep. Depends on the scene for me. Some scenes I'm like, yeah, I'll watch this again. But I'm not dying on the hill for this film. I get all the arguments, but it's truly empty calories / cotton candy / whatever axiom you want to insert. I get it. And look, and I'm surprised none of you touched on this as well. this blows away the original. If you've ever sat through the one with Sammy Davis Jr. and fucking Sinatra and Dean Martin, if you haven't, here's what it is. Two and a half hours of them serenading each other and trying to show a dick measuring contest of who can sing more while having a heist take place in the very waning moments of the film. That film fucking stinks. And that's one I highly endorse that they did a reboot on, because the original is terrible. Oh, by the way, the only thing missing from Ocean's 11 was George Clooney lighting a cigar in the very end going, "I love it when a plan comes together." This was a perfect collection. Should have been Ocean's 11. 11 things that had a million to one chances of having at the exact perfect time to make a perfect heist happen. All this shit, you're like, okay. Again, suspend disbelief, fine. But again, mindless cotton candy, I'm okay with it. Not dying on the hill. 6.5 out of 10.
Oh, generous.
I prefer Ocean's 13. I'm going to get shit for that. I don't care. 12 is terrible. 12 is fucking garbage. But I love me Ocean's 13. I love Ellen Barkin in it. I love Al Pacino in it. It's
that brings Andy Garcia back, right?
It does. It does. He's back, and yeah, the twist in the end with him is kind of cool. I like 13. 6.5 out of 10. All right. Critics, five star reviews. Quite possibly one of the best remakes ever made.
Star reviews.
That is true. How many remakes are there that surpass the original? We've talked about two of them already that would allow this podcast. Three, I should say. The second remake of Planet of the Apes with James Franco is pretty goddamn good.
I don't even, that wasn't a remake though. It was like a prequel. They were prequels.
Fair. Combining with enough star wattage to rival the lights of Vegas, the writing talents of Ted Griffin and Soderbergh's incredible directorial and cinematographic gifts. I don't know, whatever. You've got yourself a winner that will stand the test of time. In the douchiest comment I've seen today, one of the great dessert courses in contemporary cinema.
What?
One of the greatest dessert courses in contemporary cinema.
It's like the tiramisu of movies.
Is this a fucking chocolate mousse? What's the entree then? High fucking heat?
I don't know about that.
Someone wrote that review while very hungry. Grubhub's almost here. Got to finish up. Soderbergh's most commercial film to date is a star-driven, semi-successful. It made fuck you money. Slightly better remake of the 1960 original feature. That's a lie. The original is trash.
Critics one star reviews.
I left feeling like I went to the All-Star game and only got to see them shoot free throws. So I speak sports too, but I don't. What do you think? The stars didn't have the chance to shine when all the cards have been turned over. Oh, more. Here come the Vegas puns. Nothing seems more at stake in this movie. Has the feel of a put on. It put me off. These last two are fucking doozies. Whatever you do, don't pay attention.
That had to be a typo. He had to mean whatever you do, don't not pay attention.
It's like that line in Brain Donors, a film that I love that no one else has seen. Miss, these seats are dreadful. They're facing the stage. Like that kind of line. Highly recommend all of you.
I know. I've been meaning to watch it.
One of the greatest films no one's seen. A landfill of toxic star personas and auteur laziness.
Oh, shut up.
Word soup and, oh, let me throw a French word in there with a little buzz behind it just to show that I read Variety magazine 3 times. Fuck you.
Amazon.
Amazon five-star reviews. There are a number of starts. George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Julia Roberts, Andy Garcia, Matt Damon. Actors performed it outstanding. It is teamwork. All of them so nice fitted together that every scene is perceived naturally. There are two cameos. Heavyweight champions Lennox Lewis and Vladimir Klitschko. Signed, Don King. I love this film with its quick wit, abstract plot, and twist that you would not expect. The acting was so good as well. I don't want to reveal anything that happens, but the premise is George Clooney and Brad Pitt are trying to gather people and perform a heist on a major casino. And of course, there's a girl involved, smiley face. It was so worth the money to rent, and it caught me off guard in the end. I can't wait to see the next two and would heartily recommend this movie to anyone who likes action. A complex plot that makes you think and quick, hard to catch wit. Go see it. Signed, president of the Larry the Cable Guy fan club. What a fucking dolt. A complex plot. Wait till they see Tenet. Then their head will shoot right off their shoulders in disappointment. Next one. Ocean's 11 makes a deal with you. It asks you to promise not to notice the plot holes and inconsequentiality that runs throughout its labyrinth narrative. In return, it offers more star wattage in one sitting than five other blockbusters combined. For the most part, I'd say it's a fair trade. For the most part. The film doesn't live up to the deal in several ways. First, we get some pretty silly casting choices. Matt Damon is a complete waste. Didn't he write Good Will Hunting to get out of playing underwritten cardboard parts like this? Julia Roberts, she's called Tess, as in Tess Trueheart. You must be joking. Is not in the least sexy, desirable, or tough enough to be caught in a love triangle with two very vital men. Gould couldn't look tackier, bushels of gold chains complete with an abundant fur for space on his exposed chest, but he chomps on his cigar and delivers his lines with the gusto of a true pro. Oh, and check out the aw shucks fountain ending he tacks on. Blech.
Wow.
Amazon one-star reviews. What can I say? Julia Roberts is an unattractive lady and terrible actress. It's a little bold. George Clooney does nothing for me either. What? Andy Garcia should have picked a better role.
Wow.
The hero that said, oh, that state was Andy Garcia.
Did Andy Garcia write that?
No, signed Andy Garcia's mom. No, actually, signed Andy Garcia's dead conjoined twin. He was a conjoined twin for all you folks who did not understand that joke.
Was he really?
He was.
Wow, that's wild.
That's true. His conjoined twin, obviously. Well, Ocean's 12 was better. Ocean's 11? Oh, we don't talk about that. Like Fight Club? Okay. Decided I didn't like watching a movie that glorified crime. Signed, Martin Scorsese. Watch the 1960 version instead. Far fewer leaps of logic. Oh, really? So when people are singing, oh, as they rob out fucking bags of chips and run out of a casino, that's more believable? This next guy captured my heart. This really happened exactly like this. I know a guy that worked in a casino.
What?
Outstanding.
Well played, sir. I'll buy you a drink. Kevin Israel, did Brandon Wiener gut the sacred cow?
I got to tell you, and I don't think I've done this one before. I'm torn on this. I really am. I am. No, I am. I'm torn. I think he might have, but I don't know. In my professional say, I would put it to our listeners because I'm torn.
Well, you know me.
Or I'll leave it to our esteemed creator.
Well, listen, I'm leaning no, but you know me, I'm a fan of the people and democracy at its finest, which our fine country is built on that principle. So we shall put it to an audience vote. I lean no. Kevin Israel is ambivalent, but let's let the audience decide. Audience, do you think Brandon Wienerd definitely got the sacred cow? A Twitter poll will be up, but I want you to shout out in the comments, do you think he did the job and did it well? So audience, it's up to you.
To the people.
Listen, that's how we roll in these parts. Brandon, again, what are you up to? Where can we find you? Talk to me, Goose.
Brobible.com. Check it out. Read it. Share it. That's it. That's
live it. Know it. Love it.
We just had an interview drop today with Matt Damon.
How timely.
Oh, shit. That's amazing.
Which is like the first that we've ever gotten anywhere. Not sure. We had one with Matthew McConaughey earlier this year, but Matt Damon's like, you know, I don't know. That seems like a big deal.
Matt.
Yeah, that's a huge deal.
Matt, are you tired defending Harvey Weinstein in all of your postings? That's my first question.
Did he do that? That's terrible.
Him and Affleck were kind of like defending him to some like less degree. From what I remember, I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure. And that's why we haven't seen Matt Damon in a long time, because he kind of sort of did defend him to some degree. May have to cut that part out, but I'm pretty sure I thought I remember reading that. He kind of came out in support of Weinstein.
We'll Google that.
Yeah.
He was just, I think the reason we talked to him was around this like Stillwater movie.
You mean it wasn't about the Great Wall, that movie he did?
No. Oh, Jesus, that was terrible.
I'm more offended that you watched it, Kevin Israel.
I did. I think I watched it on an airplane.
Even on a plane, I still wouldn't subject myself to that horse shit. Nonetheless, Kevin Israel, what are you up to besides watching The Great Wall and writing a spec script for a sequel?
Oh, man. The Great Wall again. Well, first of all, I have two submissions to our movies we would consider for remakes that we would consider doing on this. One, The Fly, and two, Dread.
I said
Dread. No goatee will agree with me on Dread.
I said Dread.
Did you say Dread?
I did. I said Dread and Star Trek, and this is the third. Yeah, I agree on Dread. Yeah. Fly is a good one. I'd buy. I let The Fly go, the first one, obviously. Cool.
Anyway, you can find me on kevinisrael.com. Check out my calendar for upcoming events and all the places I will be doing comedy. And please leave us a 5-star rating and a 2 or 3 sentence review. How great you think we are, because we are, and because we're. And we will we'll shout you out on social media, as Kevin Goatee loves to do.
Yeah, and don't be afraid. Listen, Ask a Gutter. You have all our gang from Ask a Gutter on. So you have a question for us, we put up on Mondays when we usually tape Ask a Gutter, and jump on that. KevinGoatee.com for all nonsense that is me. And, of course, GuttingTheSacredCow.com every single day. You find blog articles, GuttingTheSacredCow@gmail.com. If you want to advertise with us, Brandon Wienerd, thanks again for hanging out with us, man. Appreciate the
You're great, Brandon. That was awesome.
Dude, this is so much fun, man.
Ah, thanks for the kind words.
I want you to gut them all. I love it.
Gut them all.
Hollywood needs a check every now and then.
Kevin Goatee, Kevin Israel, Brandon Wienerd, thanks again for coming to hang out with us. We appreciate you. Take care, everybody. Later.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly 1 in 4 consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.